My Travels in the Spirit World by Caroline D. Larson. In the fall of 1910, while living in Burlington, Vermont, I had, one evening, retired rather early. In addition to the usual thoughts running through the mind, I was much interested in listening to the music floating up from downstairs where my husband, who is a violinist, was rehearsing a string quartet for a coming local concert. The musicians were playing a quartet by Beethoven, my favorite composer. I was enjoying the music exceedingly, regretting that my pleasure was occasionally marred not only by the playing of the second violinist, a young Frenchman, who, although a very good amateur, had the misfortune of playing out of tune now and then, but also by the too soft-loud playing of the cellist, a local merchant. I had been enjoying Beethoven for some time in spite of the faults of these two players, when suddenly I underwent a very strange experience. A feeling of deep oppression and apprehension came over me, not unlike that which precedes a fainting spell. I braced myself against it, but to no avail. The overpowering oppression deepened and soon numbness crept over me until every muscle became paralyzed. In this condition I remained for some time. My mind, however, was still working as clearly as ever. At first I heard the music plainly, but soon the sounds began to slip away from me by degrees until finally everything became a blank, and I was unconscious to life and the world. How long this state lasted I do not know. What happened during this period I am also unable to relate. The next thing I knew was that I, myself, was standing on the floor beside my bed, looking down attentively at my own physical body lying in it. I recognized every line in that familiar face, pale and still as in death, the features drawn, the eyes tightly closed and the mouth partly open. The arms and hands rested limp and lifeless beside the body. I gazed at that material form of mine for a few moments while mingled feelings passed over me. Strangely enough, they were not feelings of great surprise. I experienced no shock at finding myself in this peculiar situation. It was chiefly curiosity that possessed my mind. I was perfectly calm and composed as I viewed the mortal form I had just previously inhabited. I now raised my eyes from my body, and looked around the room. Everything appeared to me as natural as ever. There was the little table with books and trinkets on it, there were the bureau, the dresser, the big armchair, the smaller chairs, the green carpet on the floor, the red wallpaper with its patterns of urns and flowers, those figures which I had often counted over when sleepless. And there was the little partly soft-shaded electric lamp which lighted my bedroom, burning as usual. While my eyes observed these familiar objects, the music from downstairs kept floating up to my ears. I glanced once more at my body, which, to all appearances, seemed dead. Then I turned and walked slowly towards the door, passed through it and into a hall that led to the bathroom. As I walked towards the room past the stairway, I heard the music coming up with increased force, and I delighted in the lovely adagio from Beethoven's Op. 127 quartet, a special favorite of mine. As I entered the bathroom, the strains gradually diminished in volume. I now approached a large mirror hanging above the washbowl. Through force of habit, I went through the motions of turning on the electric light, which of course I did not actually turn on. But there was no need for illumination, for from my body and face emanated a strong whitish light that lighted up the room brilliantly. Looking into the mirror, I became aware for the first time of the astonishing transformation I had undergone. Instead of seeing a middle soft-aged woman, I beheld the figure of a 3 girl about 18 years of age. I recognized the form and features of my girlhood. But I was now infinitely more beautiful. My face appeared as if it were chiseled out of the finest alabaster, and it seemed transparent, as did my arms and hands when I raised them to touch my hair. It seemed as if I could see through them. But they were not entirely translucent, for in the center of the arms and hands and fingers there was a darker, more compact substance, as in X-soft-ray photographs. My eyes, quite strong in the physical body, were piercingly keen now. They shone with such luster that the mirror reflected their penetrating beams. My hair, no longer gray, was now, as in my youth, dark brown, and it fell in waves over my shoulders and down my back. And to my delight, I was dressed in the loveliest white shining garment imaginable, a sleeveless one-piece dress, cut low at the neck and reaching almost to the ankles. I looked down at my legs and saw that they were as beautiful as my arms, neck and face. I walked forward and backward before the mirror, reveling in my newly soft-found beauty. When I looked myself full in the face, I became almost frightened at the strength and brilliancy of my eyes. I raised my hands before my face and closed and opened the fingers. They seemed so airy and delicate. Yet I felt no lack of strength in them and no change of sensation in moving them. My joy and enthusiasm were unbounded at seeing myself so beautiful. Eagerly I drank in the glory. It was also an exhilarating sensation to be conscious of the fact that I was out of my physical body and that I lived in the astral. This realization never once left me. During the time that I was occupied before the mirror, I had followed, more or less carelessly, the music from the quartet. But now I forgot my vanity and listened attentively. Suddenly I heard the strains of Mendelssohn's violin concerto. I knew at once that the Frenchman was playing the solo. It was a habit he always indulged while the music was being changed on the stands. But, as always, he played it out of tune. As usual, I felt disgusted, and for the moment, forgetting all about myself, I muttered angrily, "Oh, I wish my husband would tell that Frenchman to play that concerto in tune or not to play it at all." Fortunately, the quartet now began to play again, and the soothing music of Beethoven calmed me. Once more I turned to admire myself in the mirror. Not being content to enjoy my beauty alone, I wished that others might see it and share with me the joy. A block away from us lived a Miss B, a friend of mine who had often complimented me on my taste in dressing and on my general appearance. I conceived the notion that I would go to her and show myself. "Won't she be astonished?" I asked myself. "If she complimented me before, what will she say now?" But first, I reflected, I will go down and present myself to my husband and the other men. I thought with amusement of the expression that would sweep across their astonished faces. I did not fancy that had I succeeded in getting up to Miss B, or down to my husband and the other musicians, none of them would have been able to see me at all, unless perchance some of them possessed the ability to see me as a ghost. No sooner had I conceived this intention than I proceeded to carry it out. Turning away from the mirror, I walked out into the hall. Enjoying in anticipation the success of my plan, I stepped on gaily. I reveled in the feeling of bodily lightness. While in the physical body one has to move the legs with conscious effort, now I moved with the freedom of thought. It was a delightful sensation. No one could be happier than I when I began the descent of the stairway. The Beethoven music sounded lovelier than ever. It increased in force as I advanced step by step. For but, alas, my pleasant plan was not to be realized, and my hopes of exciting admiration and wonder were to be dashed to the ground. Just as I came to the little platform which divides the stairway into two flights, I saw, standing before me, a woman's spirit in shining clothes with arms outstretched and with forefinger pointing upwards. There was a look of strong determination on her face as she spoke to me sternly, "Where are you going? Go back to your body." Whether it was that on this, my first experience out of my body, I was not to be permitted to enjoy more than this short trail, or that I had broken unwittingly some rule governing such experience, I knew instinctively that from this spirit's command and authority there was no appeal. I must obey. Reluctantly I turned, ascended the stairs, walked through the hall into my bedroom and up to my bed. My physical body lay there as still and lifeless as when I left it. I viewed it with feelings of loathing and disappointment. I knew that I would soon have to enter it again, no matter how ugly it seemed to me, or however much I shrank from it. The music rising from below also helped to sadden my spirit in that it reminded me of my failure to present myself before my husband in my changed form. But no time was left me for reflections. In another instant I had again joined with my physical form. With a gasp and a start I woke up in it. Somewhat confused at first, I soon regained my usual composure of mind. And there the strange experience I had just passed through stood before me in all its vividness. I was now in a position to confirm through personal knowledge the truth of the possibility that one can leave the physical body, taste life in the astral and return again to the earthly form. Now I heard the music once more through my mortal ears. But soon the rehearsal ended. When I related to my husband the story of my supernatural experience and we compared notes as to what had occurred downstairs, that which I had heard with my astral ears agreed to the smallest detail with what he told me had taken place at the rehearsal. This was my first experience out of the body. But since then I have often been accorded the privilege. I have traveled far and wide in space, visited heavenly bodies, visited many parts of the spirit world where I have seen and heard things which I believe have never been given to the world. In the preceding description of my first experience out of the body, it will be remembered that I was confined to the limits of my home. For some unknown reason, a woman spirit prevented me from leaving the house. But as time went on and these experiences continued, I was gradually allowed more and more liberty, and soon I wandered rather widely about. At first I traveled only through my immediate neighborhood, but as I gained experience in handling myself in the astral I took more extensive trips which covered the greater part of the earth. In these trips I gathered a complete knowledge of the spirit existence immediately after death, how they live, how they act and think. Let me say in passing that most spirits, until they gravitate to their proper realm, remain for a time in the environment where they spent their earthly life. Then with the aid of guides I was permitted extensive travels into the great realms of the spirits where I learned about the conditions governing their future existence, observed spirit existence in all its diverse forms of life. Finally, most remarkable of all, I was granted the unusual privilege of a trip into the very abyss of space to witness the wonderful spectacle of the universe ablaze with life. If all of the information concerning life hereafter which I gathered on these occasions could become generally accepted, the present dread of so soft-called death would entirely disappear. Our grief and despair at the loss of our loved ones would change into a calm fine resignation in the face of the conviction that as the dead are more alive than ever, the separation is but momentary, the reunion is close at hand. Without further preliminaries, I shall begin my narrative of life after death. I shall divide my story into three parts. First, I shall describe the manner of life here on earth immediately after death. Secondly, I shall picture life in the real realms of the spirits, and finally, I shall give my observations of the surging life which fills the entire universe. Spirit life on earth, the phrase, there is no death, used through ages for the consolation of mourning relatives and friends, is actually and literally true. For no sooner has the physical body been stilled in death than out of that mortal form, now of no more avail to him, steps the personality which had so recently inhabited it and used it for his manifestations in this life. He stands now in the full glow of another existence, having exchanged his short and limited life in the prison of earthly clay for life eternal and infinite in possibility. A human being may be said to be composed of three distinct parts. First, the ego, the real I, the actual personality, or to employ a better soft-understood term, the soul, which resides in an astral body, which again is encased in the physical body. When death overtakes the mortal form, the spirit continues life in the new body. Hence there is no death, as far as the personality is concerned. There is only transmutation from one form of life to another. Materially soft-minded as we are apt to think of this change as something vague, with no real foundation to it. We see a graphic instance of this common error in the illustrated papers, where the spirit is often depicted as a spiral column of smoke at the top of which appears the picture of a strangely distorted human face. Nothing could be further from the truth than this misrepresentation. A disembodied spirit appears, feels, thinks and acts just exactly as I did in my first experience out of the body. The spirit body, which in form and appearance is an exact duplicate of the material body, is composed of a substance as fine as that of the material body is coarse. Its fine substance is attuned to vibrations whose rapidity our bodily senses cannot perceive. Moreover, to the spirit, the astral body feels just as natural and substantial as did the material body when it was inhabited. When I stood before the mirror in the bathroom and admired the appearance of my new body, I felt just as real as I felt when I was inside that mortal form that was lying on the bed in the other room. As I clenched and unclenched my hand, as I turned around, as I walked through the hall, I felt power and vitality surging through every part of the body. There were no new, terrifying sensations. The only perceptible change was a strange, rather delightful lightness and buoyancy. Not only are all of the sensations of the former body, sight, sound, touch, taste and smell, present in the new body, but they have become greatly intensified. The spirit sees everything in the material life as well as everything in the spirit life, but in the spirit life there are not the limitations of vision characteristic of the material life. As with the spirit eyes, so with the spirit ear. It can detect sounds that would completely elude the material ear. In like manner the other senses are growing keener. To my astral ears the sounds of music from downstairs took on a new beauty. I had never before known such clarity and sex delicacy. Moreover, with my astral eyes, I perceived my surroundings with clearness and vividness previously unknown. Furthermore, I could stand up in the bathroom and see clearly my husband and the other three men downstairs through all the intervening material barriers. But though the senses by an increased susceptibility react to the change from material to astral, the mind undergoes no transmutation whatsoever except to take on the added facility of being capable of reading others' thoughts. One wakes in the astral as one left the material. So far as my state of mind was concerned, I was merely continuing earthly existence. So with all spirits. Many of them, because of this condition of mind together with the natural feeling of their astral body, are deluded into believing that they still live in the material and they endeavor to carry on life as they had always done. Nor does memory suffer in the passing over. In the astral, I could remember every detail of my past material life. I was perfectly aware of my own identity. I knew exactly what had transpired up to the time when I assumed the astral. Such is the case with spirits. This fact was often demonstrated to me by conversations with spirits whom I had known in earth life. They, too, were able to recall even certain trivial details of their past existence with which we were both familiar. In the spirit world there is no age. The astral body cannot grow old, hence there is no senility. When a spirit arrives in the astral world, he assumes the appearance characteristic of the full bloom of his manhood. Children entering the spirit life grow in the astral body until they reach maturity. As the astral body is an exact copy of the physical, so men and women remain men and women in the spirit world. All their characteristics and peculiar masculine and feminine qualities remain unchanged. Spirits, like humans, wear garments, that is an unalterable regulation in the spirit world. No spirit can ever appear without covering. The appearance of clothes is affected in the following manner: from every spirit emanates a strong aura, a pseudo-soft hyphen phosphoric light. This aura is completely controlled by the mind. Out of this substance is molded the vesture of the body. At first, right after death, the molding in most cases is an unconscious act. For no sooner is a spirit separated from the physical body than it is in some manner dressed, even though the garment be only a sort of a shroud. But as the mind gains control of itself, The act of dressing becomes a conscious act, and the fashion of the wearing apparel is largely governed by the individual's taste. Hence, just after death, when the mind is still completely dominated by earthly ideals and habits, the spirits generally affect the fashions of the clothes which were worn previous to passing over. So the first thing to catch my eye in my first wandering in the astral was the strange spectacle of spirits who appeared as mortals in earthly raiment walking everywhere. In the spirit world, the color of the aura defines the quality of the spirit. All darker colors denote a low state of development. As the spirit progresses upward, the colors of the aura become continually brighter. These aura colors, of course, determine also the color of the spirit garment. Hence the character, quality, and development of the spirit are denoted by the color of the garment. Some of the departed spirits are at once fully aware that they are able to reflect on their condition just as I was able to reflect on mine. Other spirits suspect dimly that something strange has overtaken them, but they refuse absolutely to accept the realization, and in order to shut it more completely out of their minds, they deliberately continue their familiar activity of the world. Thus, with their minds ill soft hyphen attuned to their conditions, they seem unable to reason clearly about seven their state until by slow degrees they are adjusted to it. The majority of spirits, however, are in so confused a state of mind that they do not suspect at all the great change they have undergone. No sooner are they out of their earthly form than they proceed at once to live their life along the old familiar lines. The businessman immediately starts for his office to direct affairs, wondering constantly at the delay in the execution of his orders. The traveler laden with baggage, as he thinks, looks for the train which shall carry him on his usual route. The judge places himself on the bench ready to listen to the pleas. But somehow matters do not concur to his satisfaction. The lawyer hunts for his client, but either he is unable to find him or else he makes no connection with the proper courtroom. The professor eagerly lectures his class and wonders angrily why the class does not pay him the customary attention. The hostess anxiously attempts to gather her guests together for the party she had planned, but success does not crown her efforts. The mechanic and the worker trot cheerfully to their places of work, but nothing seemed to go right. Here some spirits will enter their accustomed stores to purchase something, only to lose sight of the clerk or to discover that they have forgotten the money wherewith to effect the purchase. Others will enter the old familiar restaurant, sit down at a table and give the waiter the order for their favorite dishes. But they find the waiter so disrespectful that he either ignores them completely or fails to bring the desired food. Disgusted with such service, they leave the place to try elsewhere. But a similar result greets every effort. So they all continue in their diverse customary activities of earthly life, only to find constantly some inexplicable barriers existing between them and their desires. They live as in that dream in which one attempts accustomed actions only to find oneself bewilderingly baffled in every futile attempt. They are filled with surprise that relatives and friends ignore them, and that their usual aims fail completely. Yet no one attempts to disillusion them. First of all, it is not permitted to do that, as the sudden shock of such information volunteered to an ignorant spirit would have disastrous results. Furthermore, most spirits would not listen to such talk. They would stoutly and angrily deny that there was anything unusual the matter with them. Therefore, at first there is no questioning, and everyone must there, as here, dispel his own illusions and slowly formulate his own ideas. For the mind suffers no change in death. Everywhere in my journeys I found these new citizens of spirit land thronging the streets of cities, passing in and out of houses, traveling on trains and voyaging on steamers. In fact, wherever mortals habitate, there are to be found also denizens of the spirit world. So in reality, there are as many spirits inhabiting this earth as there are mortals. It was a strange sight to me, able as I was to reflect on the strangeness of the situation, to look down a busy street and to see spirits and mortals intermingling with one another. Occasionally I would follow into the houses of spirits I had known in the flesh. They would lie down on the bed they had always used, recline on the couch which had so often been a comfort to them, take the usual seat in the easy chair and occupy the old familiar place at the family table. But there was always a troubled expression on their faces because none of those whom they had loved seemed to recognize them. Restless, they would rise, and wander aimlessly out among the crowd in search of something or somebody that could be of some assistance to clear up the mystery. I often talked with such spirits as well as with those who understood the truth of the situation. In almost every instance, however, they spoke first and then approached me. I shall relate some of these incidents and conversations as they are both interesting and a help in understanding the condition of the spirit mind. At one time, a Mrs. C., a pleasant acquaintance of earth life, approached me. She was eight conscious of having passed over. With a gentle smile she said, "I saw your kind feelings for me and realized how you mourned for me when I died, and I thank you so much for the beautiful roses you sent me," meaning to her funeral. "If I had known and seen what I do now, things would have been different." She referred to some misunderstanding between us that had been caused by the jealous talk of some of her relatives. Having said this to me, she went on her way. I did not reply but felt very pleased. She was a beautiful spirit. Her aura was bright and her dress white. This denoted spiritual development. Another friend, Miss M., was present in her own home when her funeral was going on. I had wandered there out of curiosity. Her mind was very confused and she seemed dazed. She did not realize that she had passed out. Hence she did not comprehend that it was her own body that had been laid out in the coffin. She evidently knew that her parents were grieving sadly because of her. She tried frantically to make them understand that she was right there and that everything was well. Very much puzzled that her parents so completely ignored her, she walked up to me and in a very excited manner inquired, "What is all this fuss about? I am here. I am here." I could not utter a word to set her right about her condition, as it is impossible to volunteer such information to a spirit which has just passed over. Such knowledge must come to them through their own efforts by slow degrees. Finding she could get no assistance from me, my friend turned abruptly and left the house in great distress. One man I met made a good impression on me. He had been my lawyer in Denmark for many years. He was a man of splendid qualities and sterling character. In addition to being my lawyer, he was also a man whom I was proud to call a friend. After I came to America, he had faithfully taken care of my affairs in the old country. But suddenly his letters stopped. Although I had never been informed of his decease, I felt certain he must have died, for I knew that otherwise he would never have failed me. To my great delight, in one of my wanderings, this friend, Rosengard by name, came right up in front of me. With eyes smiling in sincere friendship, he looked steadily at me for a while. It did not take me long to recognize him, although when I last saw him on earth he was a man of 60 years, and now he was as he had been in the full bloom of his manhood. "Do you remember," he spoke up, "that when you left Denmark I promised you that whatever happened and wherever you were I should always stand by you faithfully?" I kept that promise, he continued, until I could do so no longer. For when your last letter came I had already passed over. That was the reason why you never received any answer. I knew before he had finished that he had spoken the truth and had acted honorably with me in every way, as a true friend should. With the same kind smile still playing on his face, he turned and left me as soon as he had delivered his message. In much joy over having met my good friend under such conditions, I stood for a moment watching him disappear. He seemed to be in fairly good condition spiritually, as his aura was quite bright. But since he had not been over there very long, he still adorned himself in the fashion he had always followed, namely, a cutaway with the customary striped trousers. Our meeting proved that true friendship exists and lasts beyond the grave. One woman spirit whom I came across, a Mrs. B., was still ignorant of the fact that she had left earth life. Her mind was full of anger and bitterness because she had found that her husband's professed love through a long married life had been false. "Now," she said, "he lives with a woman who squanders all I helped him to save. I was not interested in hearing more and I quickly departed from her. I had a rather amusing experience with a man's spirit who in Earth life had been very prominent in society, business, literature and art. This Mr. H. I had grown to know very well, because of mutual interests which he and my husband possessed. Both of us had been on very friendly terms with him, as well as with his family. Although I had always highly respected this man, I had nursed a certain antipathy for him.